those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I try and bring somebody in from our community who has a story about their journey and how they came to Armidale or organisation in Armidale or an event. And this morning I have Sandy Sweeney. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Herb.
How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you.
Now, you've just retired from 40 years here at 2ARM Community Radio.
I have.
And we're going to delve into some of your history. So you were born in Randwick.
I was born in Randwick, Sydney, New South Wales.
But your mother was from Devonport.
My mother was a Tasmanian, Devonport born.
And your father was in the Navy.
My father was a naval officer in the Navy. He was a chief engineer.
Now tell me about your father. There was something about the HMAS Canberra.
The HMAS Canberra, yeah. She was a big ship. She was a warship and she was over in the Savo Islands and she was torpedoed there. And we think it was an American ship that actually did it. It wasn't the Japanese. She was torpedoed there. Dad was lucky to survive that because he was on the ship, but he was at the different end. They had three engines on the Canberra, and they had six torpedoes that went through the middle of it. He was lucky to be alive, and that was back in 1942.
So you were born in Sydney?
I was born in Sydney because Mum was called over to say that Harry's ship was due in. And she lived in Devonport. Her whole family were in Devonport. She got the message to say that Harry's ship's in port or coming into port. So Mum flies over. When she gets there, the ship's nowhere to be found. They didn't know where it was. What ship he was on at that time, I couldn't say, because he was on so many through the war. 52 ships we've got we've done history on for the ships that he was on during his time there. Anyway, he wasn't home, so Mum had to have me. I didn't want to hang around. And there was a hospital just around the corner from the Naval Lodge.
The base.
Yeah, that was the base that they stayed. Yeah, Mum went around the corner. She delivered me, and my aunt, he came over from Tasmania to help Mum look after me.
After 2 months, you
went back to... After 2 months, I went back to Tasmania. We flew back over there as soon as I was allowed to fly because I was born with double pneumonia, so I was in hospital for quite a while. And as soon as I was allowed to go, she went back home to Tasmania. And she was back with some Fords then, Herb, from whatever time. Dad could have been away a week. He could have been away a fortnight. He might have been away for 3 months. But I was back with some Fords all through that time.
So after 2 months, you get back to Devonport and you start living a life as a young girl down in Devonport. What was that like?
I was a small child when I was coming backwards and forwards. My life didn't start. I was in boarding school from the age of four. So I had no life before that except Mum and Dad, the distance in between, the fact that he was away from home. You know, I just lived in Devonport. There was nothing to say about those early years except the time that she was walking along the Victoria Parade when I pushed the Prince over. I must relate a meeting I had with Prince Richard, the son of the Duke of Gloucester, who was Australia's Governor-General from January 1945 to March 1947, and the first and only royal to hold the post of Governor-General to Australia. The Duke's young family were visiting Tasmania on holiday, the Duchess of Gloucester and the two princes, William and Richard. One day when Mum was walking me along Victoria Parade on the banks of the Mersey River at Devonport in 1946, which is a beautiful short walk from town, around the two beaches, the Bluff, the Coles Beach. It was 1946, a British nanny with a British pram and with a small boy beside her holding onto the side of the pram were coming towards us. The little boy rushed over, arms open, to hug me. Mum said I pushed him, he landed on his bottom, his nanny smiled, and they kept walking. Prince and I were the same age. As researchers told me, he was born on August 26, 1944. I was September 27, 1944. We were 18 months old. I can imagine how two toddlers, especially a prince, could only do that in 1946 and in Tassie.
So tell me, Sandy, your days in Devonport after the incident with the prince... you went to school in Devonport?
I did. I grew up in Devonport along with aunts, uncles, cousins and grandparents, and I was educated in Tassie. I started school at MLC Launceston, and I did not like school at all. I did my last 3 years at the Ulverston High School, and in Tasmania in the late 50s, you could leave school at year 9 with an intermediate certificate, which was abolished in 1965. Growing up in a family with a strong emphasis on education, I was expected to toe the line. My mother's cousin went into politics, and during my school years, he was the Labor Minister for Education and Housing, and he was based in Ulverston on Tassie's northwest coast. Tassie jobs were scarce, and I didn't want to study teaching or nursing, so I moved to Armidale to live with Nana and Pop.
What did Nana and Pop have?
Well, Nana and Pop went over to Tasmania. My grandmother was in business. Pop was called out of retirement.
So how did you get to Armidale?
Well, Pop had retired. Prior to that, he'd been working with Moran and Cato in the position of New South Wales relieving manager. M&C, as it was known, was an independent retail grocery store wholesaler. Pop was asked if he would consider moving out of retirement to strengthen the sales at Armidale. My grandmother sold her business and the move to Armidale became a reality. They managed the store from 1956 to 1963. Tassie didn't have much in the way of jobs, so I moved to Armidale in late 61.
Then you were married.
I did. My wedding was brought forward to late December 1963 because Nan wanted to give me a wedding, and we had the reception at Tats Hotel in those days, which was the upmarket hotel, and Pop wanted to give me away. We were married in 1963. We had a daughter. Lee was born in 1966, and the expectation for education was still grounded in me. Our daughter was educated at PLC. My granddaughter and grandson were at PLC and Taz.
So you're in Armidale, you're married, you've got a daughter, Lee. Did you find any employment or education while you're in Armidale?
Well, in January the 24th in 1972, I began my 35-year career with ANEH, which is Armidale New England Health Service, as it was back then. I was employed in the new sterilising unit, and this unit was the beginning of outsourcing services from nursing staff to specialised departments. The aim of a CSSD department is to deliver a high-quality controlled service to all patient care areas. The basis of good care to patients exposed to surgery begins in CSSD. Full title, Central Sterile Supply Department. 3 years into my employment, I passed and obtained both the Sterilising Technology Certificate through the Sterilising Research and Advisory Council of Australia, followed by the Sterile Supply Management Certificate in 1974. Our job's description was technicians, and I became department head in 1975.
And that was till 2007?
2007 I retired.
35 years?
35 years there. A lot happened in between before that, but that was my career, and that's where, until I came to radio.
So you came to radio in 1987, you tell me.
I did.
So where was that first off?
It was in Cinders Lane.
Cinders Lane, that was the...
It was the very beginning, and I don't know if listeners listened to Phil Godfrey at the weekend, but he went on to explain how he first came here. It was in Cinders Lane, in a studio, under the stage at the town hall.
Was that behind the green doors?
That was behind the green doors.
Well, we've now, in our new studio, I've painted the front doors nice and green.
And I noticed, and it took me back.
Just for you?
Yes, it went back to 1987 for me and about 1978 for Phil Godfrey.
So tell me about the different type of things that happened, Ray, or maybe mention some of the people that you were involved with early on.
Then, when I started, Sandra Baker was the manager in those days, and when Sue Lawson, who is also in Armidale, became my manager, and then I was on the board of directors with Sue Lawson, the station manager, Joe McNamara as treasurer, and I was the board secretary. Now, I did that board, I don't know, three or four times, I suppose, over and over and over, until Susan left. I used to catalogue all the music, or the country music anyway, because there were no computers in the building in those days. They had nothing to go by. And apparently, when one of the managers left, they didn't know how much was missing. And I said, well, let me do it. I've got it all at home on my computer that was built for me for radio, my private one, and the station one.
So you had a couple of programs. What were the programs?
Yeah, well, I was offered the late shift on a Tuesday night, 10 till midnight. Back in those days, you couldn't say what you wanted to do or can I do this. You took what was available. A 60s program was available from 10 o'clock until 12 o'clock on Tuesday nights. I did that for 3 years. And in the meantime, I was also doing a Wednesday night country. So I was doing those two programs before Phil Godfrey decided he was going to New Zealand. And he handed the microphone over to me in November of 1991.
So that sort of fits in the country music. That sort of fits in with the line dancing. Tell me about the line dancing.
It does fit in with the line dancing. In 1993, we went to America. Now, it was a huge tour of America. We were there for over 4 weeks. But I was in Nashville, and it was fanfare. And fanfare was top country festival around the world in those days. I came across the new country. I came across the artists who were presenting new country. And I brought a hell of a lot of CDs back because I didn't have a lot of country until American country became popular. And that was in 1993. And that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to bring country music to Armidale, the new country music to Armidale, and line dancing, because line dancing was ripe over there. It was in Australia, but it was in the bigger capital cities. It wasn't local. I introduced it to Armidale.
So how did you actually introduce it? How did it actually work?
Well, I came home with all the CDs, and I decided I had to find a teacher. Well, where was I going to find a teacher? All the ones I've located were all tech and jazz and goodness knows what not. I needed a line dancer. Somebody from the CWA phoned me one day and said, try Kath McManamon in Tamworth. And that's where I started.
So did she come up to Armidale to do the...
We went to her.
Oh, you went to Tamworth?
We went to Tamworth first. We met her. We met, and there were another three groups in Tamworth. She wasn't the only group. So, but she was the one we chose, and we stayed with her for a long, long time until she retired. She taught us. We learned from her. We had a girl that we had that was a good dancer who could pick up the steps, and she was our teacher. We went through a couple of teachers. My group actually broke away from the other groups, and I started my own group, the Redneck Rockers, Dancing the Line.
And is that in Armidale?
It was in Armidale.
And where were you practicing?
And we were practicing in Armidale, and we also went to, we were offered floor at the bowling club in Urella, and we had 10 years with them down there. We had a Chinese dining room right beside us, so we were lucky. It was great, absolutely. We were paid to go down. Our fuel was paid.
And I noticed that line dancing is going now. It's had a bit of a resurgence.
And no, it hasn't. It's never gone away. But it's improved and it's gone with the times. And you've got the younger ones that we had when they were 5, 6 and 7. We had them now teaching and doing their own. So it evolved around the new country, and lots of other music came into the source as well. And that was all over the world. It just wasn't in Australia. It was all over the world. It became more open. There was a lot more pop. And so, yeah, it's found a new path, but there is still a teacher in Armidale up at the Masonic Lodge right now taking a lot. She's actually brought another section of teaching into a group in Armidale. She taught them the easier steps, music to beat to, because your beat's important when you're line dancing. The old type of dancing, for the older people, it's you, through U3A, and she's a marvellous teacher. She taught what we were learning back in 1993.
So tell me, let's fast forward to Kelly's Country and your connection with the New Zealand country music.
Well, Kelly's Country was a blessing. It really was a blessing, because Peter and Colleen Duckett, the sponsors then, retired from sponsorship. And I had to find somebody. I didn't have to find somebody else, but somebody said to me at the coffee shop one day, Sandy, do you want a sponsor for country music? And I said, well, no, not really. And the friend I was with, I said to Bev, how about Kelly's Country? She said, I'll take it home and ask the family. And she did.
And so when was that? How long Kelly's Country's been going on?
Close to 8 years.
So sponsored by Kelly's Transport of Armidale?
Yep.
And you do a whole lot of quite modern country music?
Oh, it's different.
Oh, no, it's great. Like, I enjoy the modern country because I like my modern bluegrass as well. Yeah, so I think we have to mention, so the country that you've been doing is more the modern country, the new country. It's not the old country, although you do have a Slim Dusty section in there, which we have to take our hats off to some of those people like Slim Dusty. But yeah. there's the New Zealand connection. Tell me about the New Zealand connection.
Well, Phil Godfrey was doing a country music at Big River. He did a lot of stings for me. We corresponded for quite some time. We were always in touch. And when I told him it was my last show coming up, he was the one who suggested, I'm going to stream this. If this is your last program, I'm going to stream it. So it was his decision to do that. He organised it over there. He stayed with it for the 3 hours in case it dropped out, as it sometimes does in New Zealand on the West Coast.
So how long would Phil Godfrey was doing the show with?
For heaven's sake, he did his country in Armidale from 1978 till he left in 91. Then he went to Big River and he started up the same program that he left in Armidale. He resurrected in New Zealand, so it was still...
Phil provides the intro, though, for your show.
Yeah. I had all that organised before I started my programming.
Right.
Before I started with either one of them, I made sure I had programs and stings to introduce and to support.
So, you've had your 40 years here, and last year the station nominated you for Citizen of the Year, and we were lucky enough to get you over the line with Armidale Council.
Well, you did. Yes, you certainly
the
did.
Armidale Council Award, Citizen of the Year. Mm. What did you do for that 12 months?
Well, I think it's a feather in your cap too, because we've never been nominated for something like that, as a radio station. For somehow, you know, a lot of people are nominated for those kind of awards, but not radio. So it was a marvellous thing for me.
So what did you do in the 12 months as an ambassador, I suppose?
Well,
for
I did. I was able to look after the people of Armidale as part of the certificate award, and I was still able to do my programming, so I just combined the two. And I made myself known. The first month I made myself known to the volunteers meeting that they have every month. On the last Thursday of every month, there's a volunteer meeting.
And that's down...
It's down in Kent House.
Kent House, in one of the rooms
behind.
Jacaranda room. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the volunteers who come, you might only get one or two. There may be nothing to even talk about. Gradually, one or two would drop out, some would drop in. But that was where I met Jane Davies, because she was in charge of the volunteers. She was able to introduce me to people, but I found my own way. I made myself known. I rang around people, Armidale. And I just said, look, I've been awarded the Citizen of the Year. I'm just letting you know that. So I did that with Meals on Wheels. I did it with the Blood Bank. I did it with U3A. That was towards the end of it. And I rang and kept in touch with those people for the next coming year, if they were able to nominate somebody. In the meantime, we had a little dog. And the little dog sort of lived around our... He was a street dog. He lived around our village. Somebody found him. They couldn't catch him. He ended up in the shelter. I phoned the shelter and I said, have you got this dog? He was on Facebook, and that the picture of him was given to me by somebody else.
What was the name of the dog?
Oh, the dog was called
Houdini.
Houdini. They called him that because they couldn't catch him. That was his name.
And he's now your dog.
And he's now my dog. I told them to please put a name on that little boy for me. So we went out and to meet him. The handler that brought him out to us, this little fellow just stopped and sat beside him. I said, and Kyle looked at me and I said, I'm going to take him, Kyle, put my name on him. So anyway, he put my name on him. I took him home. I changed his name to Leo because he's either Pope Leo or he's Leo the Lion, but he's got some character in him and he's just the most beautiful boy.
Oh, that's great, because pets, we know that pets make us live longer.
Yeah, that's
and happier.
Right. Yeah, but they took my photo for magazines. Council magazines, they took my photos, but they also included Leo's photo.
Oh, very nice.
He was the pride of the...
So you've 12 months, you just finished 12 months as the Citizen of the Year. I interviewed David Stella, who just recently on the long weekend was awarded the Citizen Elder of the Year.
Was he?
Mm-hmm. And we talked about your nomination with council.
Mm-hmm.
So 40 years with the station, 35 years... with New England Health,
mm-hmm.
40 years with the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
What's planned for the future, Sandy?
Well, it'll be the first time in all those years that I've had a weekend to myself, isn't it? I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to find out. I was in the garden yesterday and a few of them walked past me and something must have been said on the bowling green. Congratulations on your 40 years, Sandy. What are you going to do? And I said, I'm not sure, but I said, I'll have to find something because, yeah, I can't keep still.
I think you'll find something, Sandy. Now,
I can't follow you in bluegrass anymore, but I'll enjoy listening to you.
But I do love when you do slip a little bit of bluegrass in there, and I know it's for me.
Well, Maybe, I don't know, because I like bluegrass too. And bluegrass is popular again, isn't it?
It's always been popular.
It's always been popular.
Well, we do have the show that is the top 20 bluegrass,
yes.
As voted by the people in the know across the world, the latest and greatest bluegrass, and that's Saturday...
4 till 6.
4 till 6, just after your show.
Oh, I still remember.
We might pull it up there. It's been great to chat with you. You're definitely a gem in our community, one of our community-minded people, your commitment to New England Health and 40 years with radio.
It's funny, isn't it, that you stick to two jobs for a hell of a long time.
Well, thanks, Sandy, for coming in to Community Spotlight.
Oh, that's fine, Herb.
That's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.